Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ash Nolte.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring Big Ten Network, Inside Lacrosse Analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, another great show ahead this week. We're going to give a recap on the just-ended Duke-Notre Dame game, review news of the week, and there's a good bit of it, and preview the biggest games of another huge weekend as we get into late April. We'll also have a conversation with Georgetown head coach Kevin Warren. A great conversation, really fun guy to talk to. He has his Hoyas program rolling. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dix, another terrific Thursday night game. I thought it was over when it was 12-7. Duke had made a nice little run to get it from 9-3 to 10-7. They cut the lead to 3, and then Notre Dame scores a couple goals, and it looked like it was over. And then it became the Mekhi Montgomery and Michael Sauer show.
Yeah, what a great game. You know, really not compelling for a while. Notre Dame just really came to play and was executing fantastic. Kavanaugh was great in the first half. And then Duke became Duke, right? I mean, we talk about all the time, Maryland became Maryland. You know, Duke then just chipped away, and got the job done in overtime. A huge win for the Blue Devils. Tough loss for Notre Dame, especially you consider they outplayed Duke for about 50 minutes in that contest. You know, 58 minutes in that game. 55 minutes, I should say. That's life in college lacrosse. That's life in the ACC. That's life at the elite level, you know, with Division I men's college lacrosse. Notre Dame's got to pick up the pieces pretty fast because they go to Chapel Hill on Sunday for a game against North Carolina. But, you know, I got a couple of just good thoughts. I think they're good thoughts on this game. But, you know, wanted to give you an opportunity before I started blabbing.
Yeah,
on.
Sure. So, you know, Duke outscored Notre Dame 6-2 in the fourth quarter. And I feel like Duke's like that veteran NBA team that has been to the playoffs a bunch of seasons in a row. They know they're going to make the playoffs again. And they're just kind of reserving their energy for that playoff run. And they, again, I know they're trying to win every game, but they seem like they're kind of going through the motions in the early parts of the game, knowing that they have the ability to turn it on at the end and win as they have. This is their fourth Thursday night game. Each of those games they've won in by one goal, two of them in overtime, like tonight. And, you know, they get the job done, and you know, the play of their veterans at the end and their young faceoff star, Jake Naso, really helped them get back into it in the fourth quarter and ultimately win it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I don't think that Duke was going through the motions. I think that was more about Notre Dame playing really good lacrosse. I mean, that's a fantastic lacrosse team, and their offense has been really good, led by Pat Kavanaugh. You know, Dobson has emerged, really good play, and they got other weapons as well. A couple things from this game. One, Michael Sauers. A couple weeks ago, we talked about with Matt Kinnear when he was on the show, and we talked about after the Duke Carolina game, how we felt like Chris Gray may have missed his Tuaraton moment. Was tonight Michael Sauer's Tuaraton moment? Game tying goal late in regulation with not really a Michael Sauer's move. Up top, got a little space left-handed and ripped it. He scored the goal that got him within one, then he scored the game tying goal.
Yeah.
And both of them were rockets from distance, using picks with the left hand. So, you know, lately I've been comparing Jared Bernhardt, Chris Gray, Michael Sowers. And when you talk about Sowers, it's typically quickness, vision, feeding ability. Gray, shooting, quickness, speed, strength. Jared Bernhardt's kind of like all of it, you know, maybe not the passing ability of Gray and Sowers, particularly Sowers, but the strength, speed, athleticism, size, unguardable, right? Is way Jared Bernhardt is considered. Michael Sowers put that Duke team on his back, much like Mekhi Montgomery did earlier, scoring what, 3 goals in about six and a half minutes. Montgomery and Sowers both showed up at the critical moments for the Duke Blue Devils, and Sowers was fantastic. That could have been his Tuatara moment. Second, did it against what many people feel is the best defense in college lacrosse. You did it against Notre Dame. I mean, we've been told no one can go against Notre Dame. No one can beat Notre Dame, you know, especially with their backs against the wall, with the chips are down, all that other kind of thing. Duke's offense made the plays, you know, so you got to tip your cap to them. Last, the funky call, or I'll call it the awkward call at the end of regulation when Kavanaugh beat, I believe it was JT Giles-Harris from Duke. Correct. Loses his shoe, referee stops play. As awkward as that seemed, it's the right call. So here's how this rule goes. If you're an offensive player and you lose a piece of equipment, shoe, glove, whatever, stop play immediately and allow that offensive player to get redressed, if you will. Then you resume play. That rule was changed. I want to say it was been about 10 years, 8 or 10 years ago. Maybe even longer. When that used to happen, it was a legal procedure. Like if an offensive player lost his shoe, lost a glove, boom, illegal procedure, playing without your equipment, we're going the other way. They modified the rule so as not to penalize the offensive player. Now, had the Duke defender lost his shoe and continued playing, that would have been a flag down. So in other words, Duke defender loses his shoe, he's got to get off the field and sub for somebody. Think the 2017 Big Ten championship game late when Jeff Henrich from Ohio State, remember he lost his glove and was playing without a glove, and Matt Palin, the referee, was standing next to the glove and he didn't want to throw the flag. He's like looking at the glove, looking at Henrich, hoping that Jeff was going to get off the field, and he didn't. He went and played the ball. That's when the flag came out. So offensive player, lose a piece of equipment, stop play immediately, let him get the equipment back on, boom, we're playing. Defensive player, lose a piece of equipment, get off the field. If you play without that equipment, flag down. So think about it. No pun intended, shoes on the other foot. Duke player loses the shoe. At the very least, Kavanaugh is now, I mean, he beat JT on the play, but now he doesn't have to worry about a trail check. He doesn't, you know, because JT's got to get off the field. But if JT would have continued to play him, flag down, Notre Dame then gets the EMO. There's no, they probably would have held it. And they would have had no face off and they would have had first crack at winning the game in overtime. So that's that, that is that rule.
It has to be a huge frustrating loss for Notre Dame, especially as they go into another game on Tobacco Road on Sunday against North Carolina. What's got to be the focus for Notre Dame besides just putting this game behind us?
You know, you got to bounce back. You got to have mental toughness, which I think this Notre Dame team does. You know, Kevin Corrigan's been at this a lot. He's got an incredibly experienced staff in Chris Wojcik and Ryan Wellner. So I think the mental part of this is going to be the biggest obstacle. But look, this is again, fantastic team, terrific coaches, great players. I think they're going to be able to compartmentalize this and move on to Sunday to play a really, really good Carolina team. This is life in the ACC. You know, the margin of error and the separation is so thin, but with the exception of Syracuse, between these, the top four teams at this point in the season, it's ridiculous. So, you know, I think the mental aspect is going to be a little difficult to swallow, but knowing that you went into Durham and really handled the Blue Devils for, again, you know what, 50 minutes, that's got to be, you got to draw some positives out of that.
Duke moves to 12-1 on the season. Notre Dame falls to 6-2. Duke will wait to play their next game against their arch rival next Sunday. They'll play at North Carolina.
Sunday.
Those Tar Heels will host Notre Dame in another big game for the Irish this Sunday. Dix, let's start talking about some news of the week. And there's quite a bit. We'll start with the aforementioned Syracuse Orange. And things are going to get a little bit more difficult for them as they lose an All-American caliber player in Chase Scanlon indefinitely following an incident in their last game.
You know, my opinion on this is mixed. I'm shocked that Scanlon had 33 points, 24 goals and 9 assists throughout the season. Every time I watch Syracuse play, I didn't see 22 make anything happen. It was to the point he was being shorted and just looked like he didn't even want to play. He was just a non-factor. It reminded me of when Jeff Teat would be shut off at Cornell. There was just like really no activity, no hustle to get the ball, exploit the matchup. And you know, when you have the midfield that Syracuse has, you know, you got to bump the two poles up to guard two of the three on that first line. So that's my first thought. But, you know, that notwithstanding, it's a shame that I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know if this really impacts Syracuse as much as people might think. I think they have guys on the bench. Siebold could come in, Cook, maybe Buttermore gets more of an opportunity now. Like, they've got guys that can play. The interesting thing to me, Dan, with this is when Chase Scanlon left Loyola, he named names walking out the door. You know, he really trashed the Loyola coaches, some players, their culture. He went out, you know, with a bang. And so for him to be suspended, and who knows how this is going to play out, but if he ends up leaving his second program in 3 years, I think you have to look at the individual and not the environment, so to speak. So that's my opinion on that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would say who know those programs well that they're very different environments. And if you can't fit into either one of those, then, you know, where do you fit in? Another bit of sad news, Dix. Bob Russell passed away, age 69. He was very influential in the IMLCA, the Coaches Association, and a friend to a lot of people within the sport.
Yeah, I got to know Bob. Just a really nice man and someone who was a tremendous supporter of me. I never met Mr. Russell face-to-face, but we used to text all the time. And he would text me and say, I love your work. You know, he's a Navy guy, right? You know, his son Matt played at Navy and loves Pete Medhurst, loved Richie Mead, still loves Richie Mead. But, you know, that's how we got to really know each other. But take that back further, it was one of the NCAA championships. I can't remember what year it was, but I was doing radio and Erica had the boys, Matt and Owen. They were young and they were in the Corrigan box, Lee Corrigan's box. And Bob Russell was in there and I'd never met him. I didn't know who he was. And he just immediately took to Erica, Matt and Owen and was like, you know, your husband's just does such a great job. He knows so much about the game and you know, your dad is a really, you know, knows his stuff with lacrosse, you know, a lot to be proud of. And so when I found out earlier today that Bob had passed, I had no idea. I just texted him a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, I got JL Repert's phone number from him when we had JL on the show a couple of weeks ago. Bob was the person that gave me JL's number to contact him because I know that they're close and they had just had lunch together. So big loss. And I'll miss Bob.
Yeah. So again, we offer our condolences to the Russell family and we're sorry to hear of passing of Bob. Dix, another I want to just mention this from one of my friends texted me the other day when you were doing a Big Ten game and you were speaking about big fans of yours. One of my friends texted me and said, I love when Dixie does these games. He's so good. He's so knowledgeable. He's just blowing you up. I shared that with you. You're like, who is this guy?
I was like, what's her name? I was like, what's her name? Fingers crossed. And you're like, oh.
Matthew, his name is Matthew Porter.
Yeah, sure.
And then another person texted me too. And was like, Dixie's so good. I just love listening to you and Dixie. So anyway, you have a lot of fans out there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Look, we've what I've learned is just call the game, man. Call what you see. Entertain the fans. Working with Joe B. I mean, God, that guy, I've grown to appreciate Joe more and more over the years with just the energy, the preparation, his goal calls. Holy smokes. I mean, if you're Mac O'Keefe, and we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, but if you're Mac O'Keefe and you got Joe B calling your NCAA record-setting goal, like Mac O'Keefe's going to be playing that thing for the next 50 years. I mean, that is just a gem. His call.
That's true.
Yeah, unbelievable.
He's a pro and one of the best in the business for sure. All right, Dix, let's move on to some other news. The Patriot League this week announced that they are going to reinstate their quarterfinal round for their upcoming playoffs. The men's games will be played at the higher seed on Tuesday, May 4th, and the women's will also have their quarterfinals will be played on Monday, May 3rd. This is good news, right? More teams, more opportunities.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, why not go to the normal format? People are getting the vaccine in their arms and the season's gone pretty darn well for the Patriot League, right? With the exception of Holy Cross that was unfortunately, shut down both the men's and the women's programs. But for the most part, it seems like the other schools have done a really good job of following protocol and staying safe. So why not? Let's do this. You know, the way they broke it up north and south, a little awkward, saw what they were doing early, but you know, if you have a chance to allow as many deserving schools to play for that conference tournament championship, why not?
Other news, the Twarton committee
They
narrowed their list down to 25 men's players and 25 women's players, and the NCAA came out and said that they have their first round sites. So the tournament, as we get closer to May, it's starting to come into focus a little bit. Men's tournament, they have six sites: UAlbany's Fallon Field, Denver's Barton Stadium, Hofstra's Stadium, Maryland, North Carolina, and Virginia's Clockner Stadium. Those six sites, and they'll narrow that down to four for the first round sites of the NCAA, which is great news.
What's your guess? So four sites. I'm thinking Maryland and Virginia in the South, and then I'm thinking Hofstra for sure up north. And what are some of the others up north?
Denver out west, Albany up north, and then the other one is North Carolina's Dorrance Field. So
yeah, okay. Dorrance is grass, Clockner's grass. Okay, yeah. Denver, is that a possibility though?
Yeah, that's
I know
thing.
It
they
is,
gonna,
but I'm thinking feasible.
Are they going to fly three teams out?
Yeah,
Denver?
Exactly. Yeah, unless. Well, do you? This is a dumb question. Notre Dame, would they bus it or would they fly? They'd fly.
They would fly to Denver.
Okay, so yeah, so you're talking a lot of expense for the first round if Denver is the host team, and then you have to fly.
Looking at
three other ball clubs out there to play in that pod. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It would
all
be great
sites, by the way.
Yeah, they're great sites. Great lacrosse locations, all of them. But it's coming into focus, and that's great. And then in the final piece of news, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because we have a lot of games to preview, but Inside Lacrosse came out with their first bracketology of the season, and their number one overall seed went to Duke, and they look like they may have helped their cause certainly tonight. But the big news was they have all five ACC teams in the first bracketology of 16 teams. Five bids for the ACC, two for the Big Ten, two for the Big East, two for the Patriot. And then the automatic bids only for CAA, NEC, MAC, SoCon, and American East.
Gotcha. You know, I haven't really digested this This is the first time I'm seeing it. So I'd really have to take a peek and look at the methodology. The one thing that sticks out like a sore thumb, though, is Syracuse. That win over Virginia is their lifeline right now. That is their lifeline. Otherwise, let's say, okay, what are they? 5-4 right now? Shellacked by Carolina. What if they go to Virginia this weekend, then they go to Notre Dame and get mauled in both of those games, puts them at 5-6. I know they're looking for a May 8th game. Maybe they can play Lehigh this time around, huh? But they're not right now. They just don't look like a playoff team at all. And I'd rather see, like, I think they have one CAA team in there, Delaware. Yeah. I'd rather see like a Drexel potentially. Yeah. Of course, look, listen, a lot of ground left to be covered. This is the first bracketology, but a Drexel, let's see how Ohio State, if they could rebound and maybe grab a win in the Big Ten tournament over a Rutgers or Maryland, if they should face either of those two ball clubs. Those are the ones that I'm looking at, like the conferences that might be able to get the multiple bids. How many? They had two Big East, right? A Georgetown and Denver.
Georgetown and Denver.
Yeah, so those are the two.
Lehigh and Army as the Patriot League teams.
I mean, how about in the Patriot? Let's hold judgment. Maybe Loyola can make a run. They've struggled lately. Maybe Navy's.
What if Navy beats Army this weekend?
Sure, exactly. BU was in the original foursome for the Patriot League tournament. You know, they're still in. They might. You know, I don't know. It's just, this stuff is fun for us to just banter about. But I am not sold on Syracuse. Not at
all. Well, we will get to that game in a little bit, Dix, and that is a great time to get to the games of this weekend. As always, as we hit late April, there are so many meaningful games on the schedule this weekend. We'll try to touch on as many as possible, and I think this is an all-time record for us. So we'll start on Saturday, a huge game in the American East. UMBC, who is 5-2 in the league, will travel up to the island to play number 14th ranked Stony Brook, who is 6-1 in the American East. That game is at noon.
Yeah, the Seawolves had just, like Casey Kasem, like when you listen to Culture Club back in the day, they just keep climbing the charts, right? Come a chameleon. But this will be a great game. You know, both, like you mentioned, this has big time America East implications. I think there's a piece in the Baltimore Sun that was published tonight, and it'll probably be in print tomorrow. But, you know, at this point, like, So last weekend, we got all the tiebreakers for the Big Ten. I mean, it's enough to make your head swim. So we're like, we're going to table this until we absolutely need it. But Stony Brook is a team that, I mean, they can score goals. I mean, Dylan Palinetti is a great scorer. And then you got, you know, the cardiac kids of UMBC. You know, they've won so many close games this year. So, you know, this game is on the island. And I think we, in this space, we've talked previous, Stony Brook is just a different animal to go into and play at. So UMBC has their work cut out for them, but this will, you know, pound for pound again, you know, America East, just a really entertaining conference this year. I beat you, then you beat me. I mean, everybody's talking about the ACC, America East, you know, just keep picking each other off. So
yeah, this game is more or less for, you know, first place and for top seeding in the America East tournament cuts coming up, but Albany and Vermont are also right there in the mix too, right in there with these two teams. So this should be a really good one. Dix, you know what this weekend is? It's rivalry weekend, part two.
This should be homecoming at Hopkins.
It should be.
Instead, did you sign up for the virtual homecoming?
I think they're going to have the homecoming in the fall this year, like a real college.
Oh, that's cool.
For the first
time.
That's
good. But I mean, Hopkins waved the flag months ago on this virtual. It's like, really? You're not even going to give yourself a fighting chance to. Yeah. But anyhow, I digress.
They're legends and leaders, man. They're in the Big Ten now. That's right. So this game, talk about a great rivalry. It's great in all sports. It's especially good on lacrosse. Number 10, Army. Travels to Annapolis to face the number 19 ranked Navy midshipman. That game is at noon, and you can see it on the CBS Sports Network. Dix, I don't remember these guys being like both ranked in the top 20 in recent games. So this is they're both having great seasons.
Well, you know, Navy struggled over the last few years, and it seems like Joe Amplo, what a win over Loyola last week, came out of the gates really, really strong, weathered a Greyhound comeback to secure the victory at the end. But this is, you know, I'm with you. I don't think I can remember a time where the stakes were so high between Army and Navy. You know, both have momentum. The Black Knights have won two in a row, knocking off Loyola and BU. The Navy comes in with a lot of momentum. I'm sure our friend Evan Washburn will be on the call for the Army-Navy game. So, I mean, it always – I don't want to be disrespectful. This game always means something. It always means something. But now, in the scheme of Patriot League standings, in the scheme of the national picture, this game takes on additional meaning. And I feel you. You know, I think it's been a few years since we've had that situation between these two service academies.
Both of these teams had some COVID shutdowns on their campuses as well. And they're a little short on games played. So this is, in a shortened season, this game against a top 20 opponent becomes even more significant than the usual rivalry. So this is a huge one. This is a big one.
Totally agree.
Another rivalry that's a rematch this time. It's number 11, Syracuse, at number 5, Virginia. We talked about Syracuse a little bit. This game, if Syracuse wins this game, Virginia could be find themselves in last place in the ACC standings on Saturday afternoon, and they're the number 5 team in the country.
Yeah, it was weird. You rewind at our first meeting, and you thought that the Cavaliers were going to go into the Carrier Dome and have their way, and Syracuse just died. It was their best game of the season, like bar none. 20-10, I think, was the final. So fast forward to now, Syracuse really trying to figure out the faceoff dot, really trying to figure it out on the defensive end. And, you know, Virginia, despite the loss to Duke last week, rebounded with a nice home win over Utah. You know, listen, they're the better team right now. I mean, they're playing better. I'm not sure what to expect out of this game, quite honestly, because – it's ironic that they're playing Virginia this weekend. When you think about 2011, the run the Cavaliers had to the championship when they had some suspensions, most notably the Bratton brothers. And that was a team that it changed the complexity of their offense. It changed the dynamic of team chemistry. Guys like Bray Malfris and Steele Stanwyck, you know, kind of took center. Adam Gittleman took center stage for that team and led them to the promised land. Could the Chase Scanlon suspension have that type of effect on this team? And could that galvanize them to play better lacrosse? Now, I'm not saying Chase Scanlon was the problem on the field. You know, he's not facing off. He's not playing defense. But we'll see. And Virginia, again, they're playing at a really high level. I thought they were a little too reliant on Dox Aiken in that overtime against Duke. So I'd like to get them back to sharing the ball the way they were for most of that Duke game and the weeks leading up to that game. But on paper, Virginia should win this thing. But like you mentioned, in the perilous world of the ACC, a loss by the Cavaliers could put them in the cellar.
That game's at 1:00 and it's going to be shown on ESPN2. Be sure to check in on that one. Dix, on ESPNU at 2:00, you can see the real rivalry in college lacrosse. Number 1, Maryland, 9-0. Travel up to Homewood Field, face the Blue Jays. Our Blue Jays, two and seven. You questioned me when I included this one. You said, why are you including this game? I said, well, it is, you know, the biggest rivalry in the sport. It's our, true, you know, our the team that we know. We have a lot of listeners who tune in to hear us talk about the Blue Jays.
True.
And it also includes the number 1 team in the country. So what are your thoughts on this game? Can Hopkins, they played them tough the last game. I think it was tied at halftime. And then, as Maryland has done many times this season, just showed their class in the second half.
You just look at these two teams coming in. And for Hopkins, it's been a pattern the last few weeks. Slow start, good middle, fade at the end. Eventually, Hopkins is going to have to turn the corner in one of these games. I just don't think Maryland's a team that you're going to do it on. When you look at the personnel, Terps right now are just, they're just playing at a different level than the rest of the Big Ten. And, you know, everybody asked the question, is Maryland going to be ready for the NCAA tournament? They haven't played anybody. Well, hold on, stop. You know, these are still pretty good lacrosse teams in the Big Ten. But, you know, right now, homecoming at Hopkins, it won't be the same. Typically biggest crowd of the year. I think it's actually supposed to be kind of suspect weather this weekend. You know, some rain.
It's supposed to rain in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, the game's on ESPNU. If you don't go down to it, I don't know what the fan policy is, but if you don't go down to it, tune in to all these games. You know, we need the eyeballs on the sport. It only benefits it. But yeah, I mean, Hopkins last week against Rutgers, 6-on-3, extra man situation, didn't score. You know, there's just things that you watch with this Hopkins team. It just drives you crazy. Maybe they can put it together this weekend and shock the world, you know, shock the lacrosse world with a win over number one Maryland. I think it was Big Daddy Russell. Shout out Big Daddy that pointed out the last time Maryland was 9-0 was 1987. And Hopkins knocked them off in the NCAA semifinals up at Rutgers. So maybe history repeats itself in this contest.
Blue Jays won the championship that year?
They did. Yeah,
they did.
They beat Maryland in the semis and they beat Cornell in the championship.
It starts on Saturday, Dix.
There you go.
It starts on Saturday.
Print the tickets.
A huge game in the CAA. Number 20, Hofstra. 3-3 in the CAA. Go down to Philly to face the number 12, Dragons. Or 4-2. That game's at 2:00.
Question. Who was our guest on the podcast last week?
Brian Volker.
Question. Who does Brian Volker coach?
Drexel Dragons.
Question. Who won their game last week after coming on our podcast?
The Drexel Dragons.
Take that, Ted Moon. What do you got to say now, buddy? How about the jinx? How about the hex? How about the bad juju? All that good stuff.
Folks doesn't care about that kind of stuff. It just goes and gets the job done.
Absolutely. But yeah, I'm impressed with this Drexel team. I think they've been fantastic. And oh my God, the name escapes me. The young man that came back last week, the player who had been
out. Reed Bowering.
6 goals, right?
Yeah, Volk said he hasn't got it really on track yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been injured, but, you know, he's capable. 6 goals.
6 goals against Fairfield. And they won that game going away, 19-7. Hofstra, again, their own. We talked to Brian about this. One of his closest friends, college teammates, Seth Tierney. They face off again, and he's got to figure out a way to stop Seth's son, Ryan, from dicing up that Drexel defense. So this will be a terrific game at Vitus Field, right? It's Vitus Field in Philadelphia. That's where Drexel plays. Yeah. Nice little cozy little venue.
Yeah, good spot for lacrosse. And if you can get there, get there. Dix, before we get to our next game, it's Providence versus Georgetown. I want to bring in head coach from the Hoyas for our conversation this week. Our guest this week is Georgetown head coach Kevin Warren. In his 9th season at the helm of the Hoyas, his team is 9-1 and currently ranked number 7 in the IL media poll. Coach Warren, thank you for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
I'm excited to be here, especially talking to you fine gentlemen.
Well, we are excited to have you, coach, and you're in the midst of a really good season. You know, obviously the end of the story is yet to be written, but up till now, number 7 in the IL media poll. Huge win last weekend over Denver. But before that, and we ask every coach that comes on our show, how you best describe COVID life and how your kids have handled it, how your coaches have handled it, how your university has handled it here in 2020/2021.
Yeah, pretty interesting. You know, I think every school has their own protocols and whatnot. And one of the interesting things for us has been our guys weren't back on campus in the fall. So everything we had to do as a team was through the computer, you know, and I think having our guys spread out all over the place, just one of the things that we stress here is the relationships. And I think as soon as August rolled around, we kind of just implemented the program like we would if we were in the meeting room. And we kind of did things every week. We try not to zoom the guys out too much, but I think, you know, just being able to have a sense of normalcy is to say, hey, when we get the green light to come back, which we were very fortunate we were, we'd be ready to go, you know, and I some of the things that we realize now is that, hey, maybe guys, you know, don't like fall ball as much because we didn't practice and guys were excited for the spring, but you know, it was very advantageous. And, you know, we just, it's something that we do every year. And I think the guys were fresher when they came back in January. And certainly when we got here, I think one of the things that, you know, every coach stresses, and not to have too much coach speak, but one of our mantras is going 1-0. And you have to do that every day because of the testing protocols, making sure you're wearing masks, doing all the right things every day. That never stops. So our guys have done a really good job, you know, up to this point.
Excellent. Anyone who knows you personally or follows you on social media understands you're a huge New York Jets fan. And we'll get into this as we continue our discussion, but, you know, you're credited, you and your staff are credited with a huge turnaround for Georgetown men's lacrosse. If you and Coach Phipps, Coach Shriver, could be the leadership of the New York Jets and turn that franchise around, what are the first couple of things you would do?
Oh my gosh, this podcast could last 4.5 hours now. Jeez, you know, I think, you know, with every business or sports team, it's just getting the right people in, you know, and I'm excited, obviously, for the new coach, you know, and certainly, you know, Joe Douglas, their GM, who, as you would love, is obviously has some Ravens backgrounds, which I know you enjoy, you know, and getting the right people, you know, and making sure you get the right people, understand what the vision is. They know that day in and day out, every decision is made for what's best for the New York Jets, kind of like it's been for Georgetown lacrosse. But you need players. There's no doubt about it. The NFL is talented as heck. College lacrosse is talented as heck. And those players make coaches look good sometimes, no question about it. But I think, you know, then the developmental process. Yeah, you know, whether it's a 5-star recruit or, you know, a first team All-American coming out of the SEC, they still got to get developed to the next level. And that's where you're going to see a huge difference, I think, just reading all the stuff about the new coaching staff with the Jets and what they've done. Obviously, a lot of background with the 49ers and seeing their jump, where 3 or 4 years ago, you know, they weren't great and they had high draft picks, and all of a sudden they hit on some picks and, you know, they turned around and got to a Super Bowl. So I'm hoping some of that San Francisco 49er juice comes into the New York Jets. And, you know, the longest streak without a playoff appearance for 10 years, I'm not sure that's a great honor to have. But, you know, I'm hoping that my wife doesn't allow, I'm hoping that, you know, every Sunday through December matters, not till the middle of October. And then my wife tells me to do everything because she knows my Sundays are free because the Jets are usually losing. But I got faith. I'm a lifer with them, and we'll get it turned around.
Darnold trade, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Gosh, you guys, these are deep questions. I don't know. He's got some intangibles. He's a big kid. He can throw the ball. Again, what the big question is, what was he set up for success? Did he have the right pieces around? You know, unfortunately, the NFL is, you know, show us if you have something in 2 or 3 years. If not, you know, there's a new toy on the block that you got to go buy. And tough situation. But if it's anything like being a Jets fan, if he turns around and crushes it at Carolina, we'll all be like, yep, New York Jets, you know, so we'll see. But yeah, you know, you can only worry about the guys that are on the roster, and, you know, Joe Douglas and their group will do a good job, and we'll get some pieces, and we'll be ready to go in September.
All right, last Jets question. 100% locked they take Zach Wilson with the second pick?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, that's what it looks like. I mean, that's what it sounds like. I do a pro football mock draft. Mike Corrado from Villanova sent me a link about 3 months ago, and, you know, you can make your own draft and do all 7 rounds and pick a team. And, you know, my teams look really awesome. I'll be my draft. So, you know, if we could do it off that computer program and off that website, then guess what? I could be, I might email Joe Douglas some of my picks and say, hey, this is what we need to do.
So let's get to your team. Big win last week against Denver, 11-10 in overtime. I watched it on television. A fun game to watch. Stadium looked great. Everything. It was a great TV product. One of the big stars of the game, James Riley, face-off X. You know, he took a lot of face-offs as a freshman and won a little less than 50%. But the last 2 years, he's been well over 60%. And against one of the best ever and a great unit in college lacrosse today, he was a star. absolute star on Saturday. Tell Dix and I what that means to your program and how he's emerged as one of really the best in the country.
Yeah, you know, I'll give a lot of credit to one of our old assistants, Chris Fisher, is now at Limestone, was in charge of our face-off crew. When he was here, he was fortunate enough to get an opportunity at Limestone. And then I was able to hire Jack Rowlett, who was a fierce competitor and has done a really good job with James. And, you know, again, you got to look at what James has done. You know, James is a really, really athletic kid. James is a guy that was on his first midfield line playing offense in high school and took a ton of the face-offs too. And I think once he, you know, we were able to focus on what he needs to do at the face-off X, and his technique has gotten much, much better. But James is a really good athlete. And I think, and it's funny because we talk about it, we talked about it this week, even last year, sometimes when he would struggle a little bit with the knee down, whatever, he would stand up and use his athleticism. And I thought that combined with some of the technique as everybody's starting to learn and figure out the new rules, he's done an awesome job, you know, and I think those guys, you know, we call it face off island. Those guys go to practice and go inside and, you know, you don't see them too much. They do a great job and Jack Rowlett's done an awesome job with him. But again, I think, you know, if you watch that game, you know, now because of the rules and I think how people are scheming and whatnot, it's that 3-on-3 game. And then when we start to bring up some athletic guys on the wings, it makes it a 3-on-3 ground ball. Well, you might not win the initial move, but a counter move, and then all of a sudden the ball pops out and, you know, who's the best ground ball guy, you know, and that's the exciting part, I think, of the face-off game that everybody wanted to see again. So we've done a good job, you know, with the 1-on-1 battle, but it also becomes that 3-on-3 battle. I think we've done a really good job of getting the right people in spots to help us have success.
Attack is a position that is just laden with talent around the country. And typically when you talk about All-Americans, Towarton, whatever, Bernhardt, Sowers, Gray, Moore, Charlin Bedis, Kavanaugh, one name, though, that oftentimes doesn't come up until later in the conversation is Carraway. And he is a heck of a player. How would you best describe Jake and what he means to your Georgetown program?
Yeah, listen, Jake's an elite player, you know, and I think one of the best things that has happened to Jake is just his evolution as a player. When Jake was recruited out of high school, he was kind of known as a standstill shooter, maybe had some range, you know, but he's developed his game, and I give a ton of credit, obviously, to Michael Phipps, who's done a great job of just allowing him to be what he does best. And I think that's what Michael does within our offense. He allows our guys what they do best. So I think you have to experiment, you have to learn, you know, but I think Jake's one of our hardest workers. You know, Jake is competitive as heck, and Jake plays with a chip on his shoulder, you know, and I think he'd like to prove to people that he's a really good player. We know he's a really good player. He drives me nuts at night, you know, after watching film and going, you know, he drives our defense nuts and goes, and we go, well, he makes some plays that you go, oh baby. You know, and I think the country is seeing what he really is. And I think he's going to have a great next couple of weeks and certainly in the future playing in the pros. But he, you know, I give him a ton of credit because a guy who gets labeled as a shooter, you know, he's got to work at some things to expand his game a little bit. And he's definitely done that.
You mentioned your defense, and Gibson Smith is a player who is terrific, you know, injury aside. And he still might be there at the end of the year. I thought he was a bona fide, legitimate Schmeisser candidate, but he misses a couple of weeks. Gibson Smith out of your lineup versus Gibson Smith in your lineup. What's the difference there?
You can't replace experiences, you know, and Gibby's been here day one starter. And just when you watch us practice and you watch us just in certain drills, you know, he becomes two guys. And I think the elite defenseman in college is, how can you cover two people? You know, everybody in high school, great cover guy, whatever it may be. Now all of a sudden, what else does he do off the ball? How does he cover for his teammates? How does he make our team click a little bit more? And his experiences, he's always thinking one pass ahead. He's seen what's happening, you know, where some of the freshmen, when they first walk into college, they're like, what the heck is a fade or a pop or a pick on the ball sometimes? Because they're so used to just locking in on their matchup and dominating. But I think college has evolved where offense is now, you know, there's no rhyme or reason. It's all about playing in that gray area, and the great ones can play too. On top of that, the elite ones are able to end possessions. And I think his stick, his ability to get in the pass lane, and his ability to pick the ball off the ground are or one of the reasons why he separates himself, you know, and helps us play defense. And sometimes he makes some plays and you look on film and go, whoa, that was open, but you know, Gibby was there. So thanks, Gibby, you know, and but that's across the country. I think you see the elite guys, they do something a little extra to go, whoa, have that whoa factor.
Staying on that end of the field, I want to get this same question basically about Owen McElroy. Made a lot of preseason All-America teams, and he certainly lived up to the billing this season.
Yeah, Owen's been great. He's been really, really consistent. You know, when he came here and you know, he had some ups and downs with him and whatnot. And I thought last year he just took control. You know, he earned his spot. And I just think as a goalie, I think consistency is the key, you know, and I believe the really, really good ones now, and yes, we all know offenses are great. So any time you have a save percentage between that 55 and 60 plus, it'll give you a chance to win. And that's what Owen's done. So we know we're going to get with him day in and day out. You know, we asked him last year, hey, you got to improve on your clearing. He's improved on his clearing. We asked him, he's got to be a little bit more of that, you know, of that big brother, father figure in the goal to go, hey, listen, you know, this is what you need to do. I got your back if we mess up. So let's play really, really hard. You know, and I think he's take that onus of our defense to let those guys play with confidence, knowing that if they do make a mistake, guess what? He's there in the goal, you know, and I give him all the credit. Again, that's, you know, David Schreiber does an awesome job with him every day, just shoots on him for a half hour. And, you know, I'm not sure David Schreiber is going to break any wet paper bags with the speed on a shot, but he certainly will, you know, fundamentally we're getting consistency. So I think that's a huge key, especially as we head into the end of April here and beginning of May.
We've been talking with you for a few minutes and you've already mentioned all of your assistant coaches, Rowlett, Phipps, and Shriver. And that's something that I know about you and the Georgetown program is the culture that you've built there. What were the challenges in building that culture? And what are the key components? You mentioned a little bit in the Jets question that we asked a little bit earlier, but what were the keys in building what now is really a rock solid foundation of culture at Georgetown?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, this is another question could last forever, but I think, you know, sometimes I think the word culture gets so overused and it's such a cool word, whether it's in the business world or the sports world. But I think, you know, every coach, and you have to create an environment and you have to do it every year because you have different faces in the locker room. So one of the things that we always talk about is making sure our locker room, you know, we recruit to the locker room. We make sure that we have like-minded guys. So when you go and, you know, have a tough day in practice, you guys are all on the same page. You care about the same things. You understand from top to bottom what this program is about and what we believe in. And we're going to have to be a little bit different than everybody else on campus because we just have different goals. We have different processes to get to those goals. And I think that's really, really important. But I think, you know, the consistency, you know, from all of us, the same word, the same things are being preached. And a cool quote that we talk about in the beginning of the year was Tom Allen, the Indiana football coach, said, when you walk into that locker room, what are you expected to do? So that's something that the kids have to create because I can say whatever I want. If those kids don't believe it and then they don't self-police it, then it's nothing. But if they believe in it and this is, you know, they understand this is what we need to do to be successful and they're able to self-police, then guess what? We're going to be a lot better than if I'm just the one talking all the time. So I think that's the biggest thing for us. And at some point every year, I tell the seniors, like, at some point I got to turn the team over to you. I don't know when that is. We don't take a test to do that. It just kind of naturally evolves every year where they become the voice, they become the coaches, so to speak. And this year has been so unique where I think it's actually helped us. One of the things we talk about is our relationships. You know, we believe in, you know, if we have great relationships with one another, we can be real. And I think that's what we've done. And this year has actually strengthened our relationships because we got guys walking from the dorms to the field. We haven't been able to use our locker room all year. So we got different guys talking to each other, going to get something to eat. And so it's been really, really unique in that I think it's actually helped us. So, you know, I think you got to abide by the same things that you believe in and year out. And that's how you build consistency. And that's where I hope we are. But, you know, it's a process we got to start over every year. You know, and as I talked about before, it's like we start over for September and hear the same thing. And whether you're a recruit or whatnot, you'll hear the same thing for, you know, six, 7 years in the recruit, you know, 2 years in the recruiting process. And then certainly the 4 years that you're here.
you obviously are a big football fan, and you probably draw on some lessons from football as well as lacrosse. Who have been some of the coaching mentors inside and outside of lacrosse that have influenced you and helped you develop what you consider the Georgetown culture?
Oh boy. I think if you're going to be a leader, you got to read about successful programs. You know, I think maybe one of my mistakes early on is I tried to be, you know, quote unquote, I'm a huge Alabama football fan. So maybe I tried to be Nick Saban. Hey, this works at Alabama. This should work. And it's actually not. And I think one of the things that I realized, you got to stay true to yourself and you got to be you. And I know I'm funny looking, but I think I'm a pretty funny guy. I like to tell jokes, but we can be serious at the same time. So I think that real part is certainly something I figured out, you know, and working under, you know, some awesome mentors, Tom Gill at the Merchant Marine Academy, Bob Schillinglaw at the University of Delaware, Coach Zim at UMBC, and then Coach Tills, you know, for the 2 years I was at Harvard, 3 years at Harvard, excuse me, and the 2 years at Maryland, you know, and kind of being around a first year head coach, which I was when we were up at Harvard, and then coming to, you know, an established, you know, powerhouse as Maryland is, you know, just seeing those two cultures, seeing how, you know, what you can do, what can you influence, how much influence the kids have, you know, in both situations. You know, those are the guys, I think you got to draw from those experiences, because that's all it really, you know, that's all really that I know, you know, and I think, listen, I've made mistakes, you know, I don't have all the answers. That's why I'm part of an unbelievable staff, because they have all the answers, you know, so they make me look good at times. But I think, you know, when you have a collaboration of really bright people that all they do is care about the kids on the field, then good things could happen.
Unique is a word that, understatement, you know, describes what we've gone through over the last 12, 13 months. And it's created a unique situation in college lacrosse in conference heavy play. You play some of the teams or all your teams twice, Coach, in the Big East? All of them. So you're going through the gauntlet twice. How would you best describe the competition level in the Big East and the conference as a whole?
I think the Big East Conference is one of the most underrated conferences in the country. I think we have a lot of good teams. We have a lot of unique teams, and they all have their own identity. You know, so I think, you know, as we talked about before, it feels like NFL football, where you play a conference opponent in September, October, and you turn around and play them in December again. And, you know, it's so unique when you're going through the scouting report, or you're watching them for the first time. And what have they done since? It's something we've never done before, and go, okay, we did this really well first time. Will they see this, or what can we expand on? Ooh, I didn't see this last time. Boy, they got us on that. And I think that's it's really, really cool as a coach. And you know, but at the end of the day, they all count in the wins and loss column. So you got to, if the game is scheduled, you might as well try and win it.
Good segue into our question about this week's game. 2:30 on Saturday, you'll play Providence for the second time this season. You got a 14-9 win the first time. Big win this week, we talked about. How do you refocus your team and get ready for Providence on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. We even talked about it last week with the Denver game. You know, when we lost to them the first time, you know, on Saturday, the game didn't start 13-7. It started 0-0. You know, and each game is its own kind of journey, you know. So I think that, you know, we're going to draw from our experiences from the first time against Providence. Again, for us, the focus will be it's senior day. So being able to play for our seniors, the last time they're going to be on the coop here. So I think that'll be a big thing for us to make. You always remember your senior day. So we got to make sure we give a really good effort to, you know, hopefully have those guys have smiles on their faces when they walk off the field. So I think that's been the focus for us this week, that it's always kind of be about us. And, you know, I think sometimes coaches get so wrapped up into what other teams do. It's April, man. You got to be good at what you do. And that's what you're going to ride with for the rest of the year.
Folks, a lot of times talk about facilities when it comes to Division I college lacrosse, and you at Georgetown have seen a tremendous upgrade. Wonder if you could just describe to the listeners some of the progress that you've made in terms of Cooper Field, your locker room, weight room, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a first-class facility now. I mean, having the Thompson Athletic Center, where our locker room is located, brand new, 10,000 square foot weight room, meeting rooms with all the bells and whistles that you need, and certainly Cooper Field, you know, having an atmosphere and certainly a place to play right in the middle of campus is really, really cool, where you can walk by and watch us practice. I'm not sure you want to, but if you ever wanted to, you certainly can. But again, unbelievable upgrade, you know, and it really just shows what our administration, how they feel about athletics, and certainly we're affected 100% by that. So we're really, really excited. We believe that Cooper Field is the last piece of the puzzle for us. So we are, when everybody finally gets has the ability to come, and we'd love to have you. And it's, you know, 3,200 fans, and, you know, concession stands for you, Mr. Dixon, you know, so we'll make sure that we get some hot pretzels for you, and you'll be good to go.
That is high on my list, Coach. You just won me over.
Coach, last question for you. And we've asked just about every coach this. So road trips obviously look really different in 2021. So this is a two-part question. First, I'd love to get your personal story of your trip to Denver, all the trials and tribulations of trying to get out there in the blizzard, having to wait a day. And I've just never really heard that story. And then the second one, a little bit more fun maybe, is you probably can't eat and have team meals like you normally would when you make your trips around the Big East and other games. So what is the one like team road trip meal that you will miss the most in 2021, like favorite restaurant or something that you'd go to that you're just going to be deprived of this year?
Okay, well, I'll flip the questions. I'll answer the second one first. Our guys might say Maggiano's. I will disagree with them. Maggiano's, wonderful, wonderful place, great food. But the winner for us would be Vincent's Clam Bar in Carl Place, Long Island, right by Hofstra, where I went to school. But the bonus part of that question, when we played St. John's this year, Coach Schreiber was very, very business savvy, and we were able to get about 50 chicken parms from Vincent's Clam Bar. We missed the ambiance, all right? We missed the ambiance because going in there is fantastic. It is awesome. It's an experience along itself. But he was good. He was slick enough to make sure that we got 50 chicken parms. You know, the coaches, right? We got a little shrimp parm, medium sauce with a little rigatoni. You know, if you like the mild sauce at Vincent's, a little more on the sweeter side. Medium is got a nice hearty Italian bite. And then if you go to the hot sauce, it's, if you're a guy that likes to put a lot of crushed red pepper, that's the way you probably want to go with there. Not that I don't work for them at all, but I'm just letting you know. And then an order of shrimp balls before you have everything is fantastic.
That's the best answer yet on that question, Vic, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm passionate about it. I love the place. We used to go there all the time when I was at Hofstra, you know, as a player. So it's about 10 minutes from campus. But we treat the boys every time we get up there. And then the trip to Denver was, you know, got pushed off, you know, a couple of days because of the weather and whatnot. And we had to break up the team in two groups. One group got in at about 9 o'clock. Denver time, and the second group came in at about 1:30 in the morning. You know, so it was crazy. And the Denver airport had so many flights delayed. So when we got there, it was like Penn Station on New Year's Eve. And it was like, oh my gosh. So, you know, we were worried about 18 other things and trying to make sure we had all our bags and our sticks and whatnot. So, we were able to, and, you know, and again, just learning from that experience. That's we tend to have some really interesting road trip experiences. Our Hofstra trip from 2 years ago when we got stuck in the Poconos on a bus for 24 hours, and Denver trip, and a couple weeks ago at Marquette, our defensive shafts didn't come with us on the flight, so we had to wait, and Coach Schreiber waited up to 1 o'clock in the morning until our shafts came to the hotel. So I'm not sure our business office loves us sometimes, because we always got a ton of questions, but we make it through.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks for your time. Best of luck to you this Saturday against Providence and throughout the rest of the season.
Great. Appreciate being on. You guys do a great job. Love listening to you every week.
Dix, I don't know how this man has escaped me, but that's the first time I've ever talked to Kevin Warren.
And you're missing
awesome,
out.
What an awesome dude. I talked to him. Well, we talked to him for a half an hour. We recorded, and then we just kept talking for another 20, 25 minutes after the interview was over. And I feel like we're friends, you know, what a guy. What the guy's great.
Fantastic guy. Really, really terrific guy. And respect the heck out of him and his staff, the job that they've done at Georgetown. Tough times when Kevin took over. He talked about that in the interview, how he's matured and grown as a coach, trying to be something or someone he wasn't. and you look at what they've accomplished, man, that is a top-notch program with top-notch people, and really happy we could have him on our show. He was hard to get. I'm texting him, and he wasn't replying back. And then he called me Dan, and I'm like, no, it's Mark Dixon. He goes, I don't know if I want to come on your show. You guys are mean. And I was like, oh, we'll be nice. Don't worry. I mean, he played like so hard to get on the show, but well, really glad we got him.
You'd never know. And I hope people don't even realize that in the interview, because he couldn't have been, he's one of the best guests we've had.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's his personality. Okay. He wasn't big timing us. That's his personality. He's just a funny guy.
It's always fun to hear those guys when they, you know, because we're watching them. Usually we used to do these interviews over the phone or something like that, but now doing it over Zoom and you're watching them and like they light up when they talk about their players, their assistant coaches. But Kevin, when he was talking about the Jets, but also Vincent's Clam Shack, whatever. Oh my God. I looked that place up and it is a first class establishment. And I'm going to go eat there sometime. The menu looks amazing, but he was, you know, he lit up when he talked about that.
And listeners, do yourself a favor. Follow Kevin on Instagram. He's got two young children, a daughter and a son. His son is hysterical. The kid dresses up in like Islander gear and plays goalie in the driveway. His son and daughter have been on stage together singing and putting on concerts. The other person you have to follow, especially on a day like today when it's Friday, is Mike Phipps. Him, his two young daughters do Frosty Friday. And it's on his story around, I want to say it comes like around 5-6 o'clock.
What's every Frosty Friday.
It's Frosty Friday. And just I'm not going to tell you what it is, okay. But it's awesome. Yeah. And so it makes me smile every time I watch it.
Yeah, well, Kevin certainly smiled when he was talking about his Georgetown Hoyas, who are 9-1. They moved up to number 7 in the rankings this week, and they will host the Providence Friars in a rematch of a game earlier this season. That's at 2:30. And again, you can watch this on the CBS Sports Network. Lots of good TV games this week. Your thoughts on the game, Dix?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was my cue. I mean, listen, Georgetown, that win over Denver – gives them a ton of confidence taking on the Providence Friars team, senior day at Cooper Field. You got to like the Georgetown, you know, their chances. Providence is a good team though. Like do not sleep on the Friars. They can up and bite you if you don't respect them, if you don't give the preparation or their due. But I think Georgetown, they're riding high after beating Denver, after being handled by them earlier in the season, 13-7. So should be a good game down in D.C.
And the last game on Saturday of note is Penn State at number 16, Ohio State. That's at 4 o'clock on ESPNU. Normally, we wouldn't include a game that did not include two top 20 teams who aren't challenging for the top of the standings. But this one is big because the winner, if Penn State can win this game, it'll be their second win over Ohio State. They'll be tied in the Big Ten standings. And they would get that third seed, that coveted third seed in the Big Ten tournament.
Yes. So both of these teams are running 3-4 right now with Hopkins and Michigan, each with two wins in the 5-6 spots. And so the quarterfinals, the way it's going to work is the 3-4 have home games. They'll host. But we've talked about it quite a bit. A lot of these teams want to stay at that 4 seed because then your path to the championship is through Maryland. And no disrespect to Rutgers, but at this point, Penn State and Ohio State would probably rather face the Scarlet Knights than face the Terps. Although the last time, you know, Rutgers was in State College a couple weeks ago, 22-10, you know, Rutgers really handled them. But great game last weekend between Penn State and Michigan. Penn State rallied for that win. We saw Mac O'Keefe with 6 goals, including he broke the record all time by Justin Gutterding, goal scored NCAA Men's Division I, then scored the game winner in overtime. Like couldn't have written it up any better if we were Hollywood producers. So the first meeting was 15-13. It was Penn State beat Ohio State at Panzer. Will it be that high scoring this time around? Not so sure. Both teams a little nicked up. But should be a really good one on the U.
And then the last one of the weekend on Sunday is a big game. Notre Dame coming off of an overtime loss. They're still the number two ranked team in the country right now. We'll go over to Chapel Hill to face the number four and well-rested North Carolina Tar Heels at 2 o'clock.
It starts at the face-off. Leonard Gallagher for Notre Dame and Tucci and Tyer for Carolina, and then you just kind of go from there. We mentioned Carolina every week when we talk about them. They just got a lot of dudes. They got a lot of guys. And Joe Bresci called their victory over Syracuse last week their most complete effort of the season. So they're trending way positive. If you're a Tar Heel fan, you got to hope they're not peaking, too soon. Notre Dame, again, the mental game, put this one behind you. Enjoy your stay on the, it's a road trip. I know it looks a lot different than, in the past, but you're still on the road. You're still with your teammates. You're away from class, at least physically. Enjoy the time, enjoy the time and soak it all in and be ready to play on Sunday because that's going to be a heck of a game.
Yeah, and, it should be noted that a lot of teams do this. It's one thing to play Friday, come back on Sunday, but that extra day is kind of common in lacrosse. You play a Wednesday, and then you'll come back on a Saturday, or maybe you play on a Saturday and then get a midweek game on a Tuesday. So that extra day is huge for rest for Notre Dame, but that should be another great game in the ACC. Next, it's time for the give and go. It's getting late.
It is late, man.
We're going to go to a listener comment. Our old friend, Craig McMichael, a loyal listener, sent us a message earlier this week and said, "Hey, D-Fly and Dixie, I saw that Tufts Lacrosse and Dartmouth are squaring off this weekend. Here is my give-and-go question. What D2 or D3 teams could you see making a move and competing at the D1 level, a la LIU men's lacrosse and Merrimack in recent years?"
Good question. I think right off the bat, the one that comes to mind is Salisbury at the Division III level. They've just had a ton of success. What, 12 national championships for Jim Burtman? I might have that number wrong, but it's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It just seems like year in and year out, they're in that Division III championship game. Brian Volker talked about it last week when they scrimmaged them, months ago. But he said they were good. Maybe a Limestone Division II. A lot of guys. I'm not sure what they look like in a COVID year, but they typically carry, between 65 and 70 guys on a roster. They got a lot of guys. So those are my two right off the bat, would be Salisbury Division III, Limestone Division II.
My answer to Craig is nobody. None. Zero.
None. Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I just can't see any Division III schools making that move as much as you would dream about it. I agree. Salisbury might be one. Tufts. There's been some teams that have been pretty competitive recently at Division III that have a good history of being competitive at the Division II level. I think Limestone is a really good answer, but the reality is the infrastructure that you need in your athletic department in order to be able to make that jump, and even the NCAA rules that exist don't allow this to happen. It's your whole program has to be elevated basically for you to be compete. But it does open the door to some more of a fun question. And what are some of the Division I programs that do not have lacrosse? Division I basketball teams, football teams, colleges that compete in the athletics at Division I that would be good candidates for Division I men's lacrosse program. And the ones that always jump out at me is Wake Forest in the ACC. The ACC has five teams. They don't have an automatic qualifier in lacrosse, in men's lacrosse. And I think Wake Forest is a school that is, if you know anybody who's gone there, you're familiar with the campus and the type of students who go there, it's just perfect for men's lacrosse. Now, there are already some ACC schools that have a women's lacrosse team, and you could see them at Virginia Tech is a candidate for that. Mm-hmm. And then, there's some others throughout, in the Pac-12, there's a women's Pac-12 lacrosse conference. you know, Stanford sounds like a school that should have a men's lacrosse program. Colorado, University of Colorado, they have a women's program. It's already popular at some other colleges and universities at the D1 level in the state of Colorado. They could certainly support it. And then the same at University of Florida, big school, big athletic budget, has a women's team that's been very competitive. Lacrosse in Florida is big. You can see the University of Florida adding a team.
Don't disagree with any of those. If you're going to go ACC, I got to go Georgia Tech. My man, Ken Lovick, shout out, 1989 Loyola High School grad. He's done a wonderful job with the Ramblin' Rec in the Atlanta area in at Georgia Tech. That would be my first choice. I reffed a game. It's been a long time. It was at the University of Maryland. It was at the Field Hockey Lacrosse Women's Lacrosse Complex. It was Boston College against Florida State. This was ages ago. And it was crazy seeing the spears on the Florida State gold and maroon helmets on a lacrosse helmet. So that was really cool. But I don't know about the feasibility of Florida State going D1. So ACC, I'll say Georgia Tech. Big Ten, I'd love to see Northwestern have a team. The women's are ranked second in the nation right now. They have, what, 7 national titles on their resume. Northwestern would be a team right off the bat. Michigan State used to have a team. Let's bring it back. Get that rivalry between the Wolverines and the Spartans going again. Pac-12, you mentioned Stanford. Oregon would be one, no doubt. Nike and the support. USC, the Trojans would be one.
All fun. It'll all be fun.
Arizona State. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, really, when you think about it. When you get out into the Big Ten, the traditional Big Ten, when you start talking Northwestern, Michigan State, you worry about weather. But they have indoor facilities. Like, Northwestern women play indoor, and some of those games have been televised in their indoor facility. So you have – and on network. So you have capability to play indoors, and you have capability to be televised. Those are the ones that I would throw up for consideration.
Yeah, all good ones. And it'd all be fun if they had, you know, for just speculating, and this is all for fun, these would be great programs to have.
How about a Big East school? How about are they Big East or American Conference? UConn.
UConn would be great. Yeah. They've moved back into the Big East.
Okay.
At least in, you know, men's in basketball. But there's a, like, Seton Hall. When you look at, like, the type of school that's been able to add it, it's usually a Division I school without football. You know, think of Marquette, think of say Bonaventure. You know, like a Division I all sports schools without football. Cleveland State and Seton Hall, across, very popular in the area. No football. Could probably add something like that. That's another school that could add a men's lacrosse program and already have a conference to compete in. That would make sense. All right, Dix, another marathon night.
Yeah.
Of podcasting.
It's always good spending my Thursday nights with you.
Thanks, Dix. Thanks. I know you got your
snuggle bug.
I know you got your your second shot and you're
a little fading. Yeah. I was good. So I got the second shot yesterday around at noon, and I felt pretty good up until late this morning. Just really started dragging, and Tylenol's the remedy. It's all good. Yeah. It'll pass.
It will, and you'll be much better for it, and it'll open up lots of opportunities for you and your family to get back to
normal life. One of my coworkers called it the Fauci ouchie. And I said, I'd like to give an ouchie to Fauci, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't. Anyway, that's a good place to end. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free, for God's sakes. Pass it on. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Kevin Warren. Welcome back anytime, Coach. Good luck to you and the Hoyas this week and throughout the rest of the season. And we'd always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm at D_FLY. And remember, stay positive, test negative, and get your vaccine if you can, as soon as possible. And as always, enjoy the games while you can.